It's time for Twig This Week in Google. Why is Google making Windows available on Chromebooks? How Fortnite avoids the Play Store? And the return of the changelog. It's all next on This Week in Google.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Twig, This Week in Google, episode 469, recorded Wednesday, August 15th, 2018. The Brooklyn Hello. This Week in Google is brought to you by Masterclass, online classes taught by the world's greatest minds. For a limited time, get a free 7-day trial at masterclass.com/twig. And by Wink, the best way to discover new wines you'll love. Go to trywink.com/twig and get $20 off your first shipment. And by ExpressVPN, protect your online activity today. For 3 months free with a 1-year package, go to expressvpn.com/twig. It's time for Twig This Week in Google. Now with Google Changelog. I'm Leo Laporte. Joining me, the Leonard Tao, Professor of Journalistic Innovation at the Craig Neumar Graduate School of Journalism at City University of New York, Director of the Tao Knight Center for Entrepreneurial Journalism at City University of New York, Mr. Jeff Jarvis.
And I'm injured.
Oh, what happened? Oh, my God. Did somebody throw something at you?
Oh, I can't hear anything. Hold on. I can't find
them. His ears popped out.
Where'd it go? Oh, wait, I can't hear anything.
He's got a little wound above below the eyebrow.
I fell on the street in Brooklyn.
Oh.
Were you drunk?
No, I was not. It was middle of the afternoon. It was fine. But the wonderful thing is, just briefly, the New Yorkers are amazing. So I stagger into them. Now I know why boxers, when they get hit over the eye, it looks awful because, man, the blood is just going everywhere.
I go into
a bodega. I get some Band-Aids and some paper towels because my handkerchief was full. I go next door to the deli where they get me in the bathroom and a mirror, and I put on the Band-Aid. I get on the subway holding the thing up my eye the whole time. Nice couple comes over and offers me new paper towels.
Wow.
Guy who sits down next to me who works in a pharmacy, when he sees what's going on, he happens to have some bacitracin with me and gives it to me. I go have a meeting at Facebook and they raid the first aid kit for me.
Holy cow.
New York is a wonderful place, people. It's a wonderful place.
It's a loving, kind, generous. Actually, I've always found that to be true. People are people no matter where they are.
I once had a man come in Brooklyn, come up, grab me, and lick the back of my neck.
Well, there's always the exception that proves the rule.
I was like, oh, no, unpleasant.
It's called a Brooklyn Hello, Stacey. You just didn't know that.
Is that what it was?
Yeah, that's all it is.
I was feeling pretty violated. That is the most disgusting thing. You've heard
of the Bronx cheer? This is the Brooklyn Hello.
Oh, that was unexpected. Almost as unexpected as it was for you, probably. Wow.
Yeah, it was really startling. And I'm going to say a bit upsetting.
Yeah, no.
I was like, can I bleach that? Yeah.
Well, it's just his tongue.
It was a New Yorker. We don't know where that tongue's been.
Worse, it was a Brooklynite.
Hey. Yo.
Yeah. Yo.
All right.
So there's contrast and compare. There you go. Two different stories about New York. It's kind of like Plaza Suites.
Have you introduced Stacey yet?
Oh, God, no. It's time for Stacey Higginbotham. She's back home in Austin. Stacey's the host of Stacey on IoT.
And look who's behind her.
And there's a little corgi. He's been running around like crazy, so he's exhausted because he's really only got little tiny vestigial legs.
He's not a corgi. Okay. She's not a corgi. She has full-size legs.
Okay.
Much to my daughter's chagrin.
Stacey got back last night, and the dog was very, very happy to see her.
The June oven celebrated.
Even the June oven was happy.
I have this vision that Stacey walks in the house, and all the lights start going off and cheering. She's home.
That used to actually happen. It wasn't quite as dramatic as that, but the first time it happened at like 1 a.m. after I was getting home from the airport and didn't think about it, That is the last time it ever happened. I used to have a little welcome home, Stacey, on all my Sonoses, and the lights would turn on.
How annoying.
Yeah.
That's funny, though, that you set that up. That's great.
It was, why wouldn't you?
I've talked about this before, I think, on the show. There was a guy who had a Raspberry Pi monitoring the Wi-Fi, and when employees came in the door and their devices attached to the company Wi-Fi, he played their theme song.
Cloudflare.
Was that at Cloudflare?
I believe it was.
Yeah. And I always thought it'd be kind of nice to have a theme song play when you came home.
What would your theme song be, Leo?
Believe it or not, I'm walking on air. The greatest American hero.
Wow.
That's just the first thing that came to mind. Yeah, Cloudflare did it. Isn't that funny? It's amazing that you even knew that story, Stacey. Wow. All right.
Hey, is it IoT?
Is it IoT? Is it IoT yet? So the news is in. Twitter has put Alex Jones on a timeout.
With a dunce cap?
In the corner to you. So this is the story that's been ongoing since last Friday. In fact, the New York Times, in a rare moment of accessibility, Twitter invited two Times reporters to watch their deliberations about whether to ban InfoWars from Twitter, as had already happened on Facebook and Instagram and Spotify Apple. And Apple and iTunes. The InfoWars app is still on the App Store, both Google and iOS. And in fact, the two reporters came. I wonder if Jack Dorsey thought that this would be the outcome. They decided not to ban InfoWars, even though CNN was able to come up with at least 7 tweets that clearly violated Twitter's rules. And Twitter said, well, if he violates the rules, we'll ban him. Well, now they have, except, oh, no, they gave him a timeout. He's off for a week. He's in read-only mode for 7 days. Alex Jones can still browse Twitter posts, but can't interact with other users by tweeting, retweeting, or liking.
So they're going to scream that he's shadow banned.
Wait, hold on a second. He can tweet, but none of us can see it?
Oh.
Or only his followers see it? I don't understand. Oh,
that's interesting. I don't know exactly how this works, but you're right. The way CNET describes this, Twitter confirmed Tuesday, meaning he can browse Twitter posts, but can't interact with other users by tweeting, retweeting, or liking posts. He also had to delete the offending tweet, which included a snippet of video.
Oh, so he can't tweet. Okay.
Not clear. I'm guessing he can't tweet. I've never been banned, so I don't know. Apparently, the video that finally broke the straw that finally broke the Dorsey's back is still on Periscope. After CNET mentioned that Twitter suspended InfoWars Periscope and Twitter accounts. In the video, Jones encouraged viewers to have your battle rifles ready. Mainstream media is the enemy, and now it's time to act on the enemy. That sounds like a clear call.
Yeah, and I'd say that once someone's done that, I'd say that's kind of out with you forever. Like, he's going to learn a lesson from his time out.
1 week seems less than adequate.
Yeah. And so then we have to wait for the next, then we'll fight over, then he'll get all this attention for every tweet he does so that we can fight over whether that crosses the line or not until somebody inside Twitter decides that crosses the line, then he goes again.
And that brings us to Zeynep Tufekci's piece, which I'm sure I probably read it on your blog, read about it on your blog, actually, Jeff. Let me see if I can find this. This is how social media took us. This is not the piece I was going to talk about, but we will talk about that.
I read that piece.
Yeah, it's a history of social media, basically. I don't know if it adds anything to the conversation. She does have a piece, and by the way, Tufekci's great, but the lessons of the era, which are maybe necessarily as insightful as some of the conversations I think we've had here. But the article I was thinking of, which wasn't, I guess, from her, was described how, here it is, this is Joan Donovan's study that she did with Dana Boyd, right?
Uh-huh.
In which basically, the conclusion is This isn't it either.
No, it was, it's not on the rundown.
The conclusion essentially is that our longtime premise that sunlight is a disinfectant, that free speech there's only good solution to bad speech is more free speech, isn't right. That
because the manipulators took advantage of that.
Right.
Right. So that's why they argue for strategic silence.
So the problem is that somebody says something outrageous, like as Alex Jones just did. And what happens is it gets amplified by media picking it up.
By the debunking, because they think the media are the enemy. So they're happy about the debunking.
Right. It only supports it.
Yes.
And the evidence is that, in fact, boy, I'm sorry. I'm ill prepared here because I thought I had pinned.
I had sent to that after NPR interviewed the bozo who ran the Washington right wing thing. I tweeted NPR, invite Dana Boyd and Joan Donovan to Washington. And then Joan tweeted the link to the advice.
Yeah.
But I can't find it.
Where did I put it? I read a lot of stuff during the week, and I always know when
here
I see
it is.
Something.
The case, it's in The Guardian. The case for quarantining
the case
extremist ideas.
For quarantining.
Okay. I'll send it to you right now.
Oh, that's all right. You've chat. Given me enough
you got
to,
it.
To Google it.
Oh, but I thought I was going to be faster than you. I already sent it to you. There.
So this is, we've had Joan on the show before many times, and Joan Donovan and Dana Boyd.
We're due to have her back.
Yes, we are. Do very good work on which they talk about all of these issues that we talk about a lot. Data and Society Institute. They have a media manipulation research initiative. That's what Joan is part of. And the conclusion from their – and this is based on their work, their studies, right? This isn't
right.
This isn't just a opinion. Newsrooms must understand that even with the best of intentions, they can find themselves being used by extremists. If telling stories didn't change lives, journalists would never have started in their careers. But we know that words matter and that coverage makes a difference. In this era of increasing violence and extremism, we, and that's Joan and Dana, appeal to the editors to choose strategic silence over publishing stories that fuel the radicalization of their leaders.
So I'm told that full disclosure is the News Integrity Initiative, for which I raised money with money from Facebook, Craig Newmark, and others, funded Data and Society. I'm plugging in something that I quite like. So this idea of strategic silence was brought up recently to a bunch of editors, and they, as they tend to, just belched. No, it's our job and more information. No.
Yeah, but that comes from that same ground of being that I always came from, which is sunlight disinfects.
So another journalist in the room said, okay, don't call it strategic silence. Call it responsible reporting. And she shut
them
up. That's
true. I mean, there are so many things. Actually, the most recent was, I saw it in the tech world. Everybody tweeting about T-Mobile or writing about T-Mobile's silly customer service stuff. It's based on a game board that they sent out. And so there's tweets about that, but The Verge did a full story on T-Mobile's change in customer service. There's so many stupid things that we just knee-jerk respond to because other people are talking about it. And that actually was the standard at a couple places that I've been, including Fortune.
Yeah.
Are people talking about it? We need to write.
Then it's
news.
We
may not need to.
Yeah.
Yeah, we may not have to have, the take that believes it, but we have to cover it.
It's also fueled. Jay Rosen's brought this a lot up a lot too. False equivalence, the bringing both sides of the story. I say the sky's blue. Jeff says the sky's green. Let's talk between the two of them instead of saying no. Jeff's wrong. The sky's blue. It manifestly is blue. It also comes from, frankly, the world we live in, where link bait it becomes the mode, because traffic becomes the way you make money. Yes.
This is a great example of crazy stuff, right? Back in, I think it was last year, that humans didn't actually see the sky as blue because they didn't have a word for the color blue. So this is, if you Google people don't see our color, no color blue, you'll see the articles about it. It was, I'm sure they saw it.
The color sky?
Well, that's the question. So they it's like they didn't see the sky because they didn't have a word for the color and they didn't pay attention. And they pulled examples from like Homer's red wine sea. So
wine dark sea, but he never uses the word blue. A philologist, Lazarus Geiger, analyzed ancient Icelandic, Hindu, Chinese, Arabic, and Hebrew to see if they ever said blue. They didn't. In fact, the first society to have a word for the color blue was the Egyptians. And in fact, they were the only culture that could produce blue dye.
Isn't that fascinating, you guys?
But okay, that's all. According to Science Alert, just because there was no word for blue, does that mean our ancestors couldn't see it? Now, this is that famous story where the Aztecs didn't, when Cortez sailed up, didn't see the ships because they'd never seen a ship and they couldn't see it. They didn't have any way. I don't know. I wonder.
Yeah.
They saw it. They just didn't have a meaning attached to it. Right. I mean, that.
But that meant that it wasn't registered there in the brain.
See the thing? The what? The thing.
No, I don't see a thing because I don't have a way to. So in 2006, a psychologist from Goldsmiths University of London, Jules Davidoff, worked with the Himba tribe from Namibia. In their language, there's no word for blue and no distinction between green and blue. So he showed members of the tribe a circle with 11 green squares and one obviously blue square. In fact, there's a picture. The Himba tribe could not tell Davidoff which of the squares was a different color. Those who did hazard a guess at which square was different said it took a long time to get the right answer and there were a lot of mistakes. Interestingly, the Himba have lots more words for green than we do. So he showed English speakers the same experiment, 11 squares of one shade of green and then one odd square of a different shade. Okay, look, can you see? Let me show you this. For those of you watching the video and you at home, which one's a different shade?
I hate this stuff.
I can tell. I see it.
I don't
know
if I can tell.
Do you see it? I see it. I think it's this one.
This is like that two-color dress thing.
You think it's that one?
Yeah.
I wouldn't. Yeah, I guess I can't see it.
Well, maybe because you're watching the stream or something. Let's see if I'm right.
Yeah, Stacey, I don't see it.
It was that one.
Oh, go Leo.
You can kind of tell. Right, maybe so only I could tell here because I could see the difference. But it's a subtle difference. Huh. Another study by MIT showed that native Russian speakers who have many words for blue but only don't have one single word for blue but instead have a word for light blue, golubi, dark blue, sinyi, can discriminate between light and dark shades of blue much faster than English speakers. So the suggestion is that if you have a word for it, you're going to be able to see it more quickly.
Anyway, that was a total digression, but I love when whenever people say the sky is blue, I'm like, actually.
Well, what would you call it? Sinyi. It's sinyi. So George Lincoln Rockwell, there's a name we don't like to repeat too often.
Oh, man, yeah.
Head of the American Nazi Party in the 60s. In his autobiography, he wrote, "Only by forcing the Jews to spread our message with their facilities could we have had any hope of success in counteracting their left-wing race-mixing propaganda." So in other words, this is Joan and Dana's quote right in the beginning of their article. In other words, this is well known to the extremes. Nobody's going to listen to you by yourself, so you need some amplification. Campus by campus, from Harvard to Brown to Columbia, Rockwell would use the violence of his ideas and brawn of his followers to become headline news. Rockwell, to compel media coverage, said he needed, one, a smashing dramatic approach which could not be ignored without exposing the most blatant press censorship, and two, a super tough hardcore of young fighting men to enable such a dramatic presentation to the public. I remember those pictures, too. Don't you, Jeff?
Yeah. Yes, I do.
Contemporary Jewish
community groups. And those were the days of pure. Oh, sorry.
Contemporary Jewish community groups challenged journalists to consider not covering the white supremacist march. Their ideas. They called this strategy quarantine.
Yep. We do the same thing with suicides.
Yes.
It's been,
we agree to do that.
Data are there that if you don't report the method.
Right.
And it's the opposite here. I say, don't report the message, report the method.
I've often thought if we didn't put pictures and the names up of mass killers.
That's another common thing that we're like. And
we glorify them. They become famous.
Yes, we do. It's their goal.
I feel like one of the recent shootings, actually, I think it was the Times, said they weren't going to do a profile on the shooter. And that was the argument. It was actually kind of really interesting that they drew that line.
The problem is we live in this world of a 24 news cycle where there's incredible demand to fill that clock of link baity, sites that all websites that make money based on the amount of traffic. And now she woke up. And, frankly, a certain amount of sensationalism that's embraced even by mainstream outlets like the New York Times, it's hopeless. Yes. Quarantine is hopeless. There's too much pressure to do it, to cover it.
Yeah, and a lot of it's the business model.
It is the business model. And then what will happen is people will look for justifications, as your editors at Fortune did. Well, but the people are interested. We're just giving them what they want.
Because the reason Linkbait works,
yeah, they click on it. So of course we're going to give them what they click on. Why wouldn't we? Yep. Well, here's a good argument for why you might not want to.
So yesterday I went to see if you've heard of the startup called Civil.
No.
Yes, I've met one of the founders. Gary, go on.
You didn't know? Okay, Matthew Isles, or
she's a woman.
This is a blockchain startup.
Yes, so it's a blockchain.
Yeah, so watch out. Blockchain. And the gravy that makes any meatloaf taste good.
Yeah.
And I couldn't understand it at all. So I went over there purposely yesterday saying, brainwash me, because I don't get it. And I don't 100% get it, or I'm not going to fully bet on where it goes. But the interesting thing to me was that by using blockchain, one thing it enables is you have a currency you can give people for certain behaviors. And so imagine where you have a site.
We have that. It's called a dollar.
No, they did a token sale to give you.
Well, they're about to. They have not done it yet.
Or they're about, sorry. To give you credibility so you can vote up and down things. Now, what
I
don't recall.
Or you could vote with your dollar.
Well, no, Leo, here's another way to look at it. So let's say we have a community site. Let's say you have your.
Let me guess. Do you buy these tokens with dollars?
Leo.
Yes, you do, but give me a minute, Leo. Calm down, Leo. Give me
you
a minute.
You got to fund journalism somehow.
I was there, too. I've been brainwashed now, but okay. I was there, too.
Okay.
Plus, it was leaving their offices that I fell, so maybe that
just, you're brainwashed and drunk.
Scrambled my whole brain. But imagine you had a community site where you said you can join by giving me dollars, or you can join by giving me labor, or you can be rewarded with membership because you're the best peacemaker in the group, or you brought in the best photos, or you did something wonderful. Right, you have a way to get other behaviors with other currencies than just money or access to content. That's all we do in the media now is give me money and I'll let you see my content. But there's lots of content out there. I don't really need your content, or give me your attention and I'll go get advertisers and I'm going to do everything I can to beat you over the head to get more attention out of you. Right. So it's the beginning of trying to rethink business models a little bit.
I mean, there are ways. We have dollars, we have votes, we have attention. I would submit that because votes especially seem to be something people are very reluctant to part with, that instead of creating new tokens, we just sort of emphasize the tokens we've got. Dollars, votes, attention. Let's really focus on that. Why dilute it with other tokens?
Well, because then you'd be in a case where, what I'm saying is you're not necessarily giving tokens. You could give other rewards like membership, discounts, other things.
Well, what's the point of the tokens, though?
Oh, you've pushed me to my limit already, and I hit my head on the ground. So
So I think the token sale helps fund operations for a little bit, but also allows you to, the way they explained it to me, and this was in April, so things may have changed, is that gives you credibility on the site so you can, your vote counts more.
Yeah, right. You buy votes. You're buying votes, literally.
And so they have it.
What could go wrong with that?
No. They have a mechanism in place to stop that, but I can't remember what it is.
And by the way, who gets the money?
Sybil, the people, they pay it out to journalists. So they use it to pay for stories.
What's
you
wrong
should
with
actually have
dollars?
Them come on and talk about it. It's a really interesting model.
I'm not interested.
Well, it'll soon be rubles. That's why.
All right. I'm sure it's fine. You guys are smart. You wouldn't fall for anything silly.
We're interested in how it turns out. It is a new model.
Yes, that's exactly well said, Stacey. Well said.
But see, this is why I think that I really wanted to highlight Dana and Joan's article, because let's fix the existing model. And then if you say, well, we can't fix it, then okay, I'm willing to look at other things.
I don't know if we can fix it.
Maybe not.
I think
an attention-based ad model will, in an abundance-based market, will get you in trouble. Because you go up in abundance, you go down in price, and you go up in desperation, so you go up in Kats and Kardashians.
Right.
That's the formula.
Right.
And crazy YouTube stunts. That's the same thing that's happening.
Same thing's
with
happening,
people
exactly.
Who,
yeah.
Yeah.
So. Yeah.
Yeah. So somebody I know actually got his show's logo tattooed on his back.
This show?
This show or his show?
Actually, it was his butt.
Oh, me.
Oh, this is you guys.
You.
Guys.
Yeah. Okay.
Crazy YouTube
stunts.
Yeah,
I did that for dollars.
Charity dollars,
yeah.
Right?
Touché. United Network, United Nations Children's Fund, UNICEF. So,
by the way, please tell me that was not for your own revenue, because
no, I wouldn't do that. That's crazy. I sold bricks for my own revenue. So, I have a question for you. I want you to debunk this AP exclusive.
Oh,
Google wants to know where you go so badly, says the AP, that they record your movements even when you explicitly tell them not to. So AP hired people they identified as computer science researchers at Princeton. I'm guessing that's Ed Felton and crew. That's
I think it was a Ravi. Hold on.
Oh, okay.
Sultan.
To verify this.
Saleh Sultan.
Okay. Because... So as you all know, when you say open Google Maps, it says we would like permission to access your location. And in general, on the iPhone, there are three settings for that. No, only when the app is open or anytime. And you choose. And I believe the iPhone enforces that. If you agree to let it record your location over time, Google Maps will display that history for you in a timeline. I like that. I leave that turned on, but some people don't want that. Here's, however, what Google says. You can turn off location history at any time. With the location history off, the places you go are no longer stored. The AP says that isn't true. Even with location history paused, some Google apps automatically store time-stamped location data without asking. They do point out it's possible, although laborious, to delete it. I'm not sure how laborious it is.
It's not that laborious, but it is. So do you want to let Jeff talk about how it's okay for a minute?
You go to myactivity.google.com. We've already shown how to do that.
So I think this is a failure of communication and transparency. It may not be evil, but this is a perfect example of engineering people or people who are building a system not thinking ahead as to how they're communicating with users and how people are going to interpret that. So it is, I mean, you could almost call it a cultural divide in some sense, because like people who are technically savvy may be like, well, yeah, that's there. We left that option there. You know, of course it's going to do this. But most people do not interpret it that way. And I think this is a real problem, because Google and others are asking for such deeply personal information that they have to err on the side of telling people everything. Because most people are going to click yes. Most people are going to be like, oh, yeah, I totally want to leave my location tracking on so you can tell me how long it's going to take me to get to my next appointment. So, or the weather, wherever I am.
And maybe it would be would have behooved AP to check other map apps, because what they say is, well, even if you have location history turned off, the minute you open the Maps app, it records your location. But I betcha that's exactly what every map app does. Otherwise, it can't tell you.
Yeah, and how else can it operate?
Google is, yeah, well, people don't know that again. They don't know that it's being stored. You could say, hey, give me the location now.
Right. But don't keep it. Don't send it to Google.
And that's,
it has to be sent to Google, though, so the maps can do its job.
Yeah, even for – they also say, oh, my God, when you search for chocolate cookies, it knows your location. Yeah, because maybe you're looking for a store that sells them near you.
Okay,
they you don't
that's
know
what, not what the That's not what the user expects.
And I agree.
I would say
– I agree.
How do you know?
And this is what Jonathan Meyer, the Princeton computer scientist who did the work – he's a former technologist for the FCC's Enforcement Bureau. He says, quote, if you're going to allow users to turn off something called location history – then all the places where you maintain location history should be turned off. That seems like a pretty straightforward position to have. Google is, here's Google's response. This is in a statement to the AP. There are a number of different ways that Google may use location to improve people's experience, including location history, web and app activity, and through device-level location services. We provide clear descriptions of these tools and robust controls so people can turn them off and on, and delete their histories at any time. So they didn't really address this issue of, look, I turned off location history. Why are you saving?
Then you asked for a function that required the location.
You're implicitly turning it back on. Is that the deal?
That's kind of, yeah.
No, but search should not require my... I can see why...
No, I disagree strongly. I use this example all the time. Sorry, my light's off.
All right.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt though, Stacey. I'm sorry.
I believe you did, though, Jeff.
I
would
did,
say
so
that
sorry.
most people, when they search for something, they just want to know the information. And not just, so chocolate chips, they don't necessarily want to know the chocolate chips cookies near me. They usually add near me if they want to start adding location. But people are not necessarily aware of how this works. We are very tech-savvy people. We understand GPS.
May I give you my example?
Yes. Please.
So if I right now search for pizza, there's a good chance I want pizza near me. I'm not going to say near me because I'm going to presume Google knows. That's what I do. Is I go eat pizza. Then I probably don't want a pizza recipe. I probably don't want the history of pizza. I probably don't want blog posts extolling the virtues of pizza. I probably want to eat it now. And so I didn't say near me. And so the presumption of locality, I bet, is far more frequent than we know. And it's a presumption. And so if I I can, you know, go to whatchamacallit? What's the don't know you browser?
No.
In Google, I can go to
Incognito.
Thank you, Incognito window. And thank you, be my brain. And I'm going to get a worse experience in search. And until you kind of really do that and see what's happening, so that Google's trying to give people what they want is presumed that, and a lot of times it is local.
I know.
But you don't
know
what they're
trying to do. I get what they're trying to do. That's why I think this is not nefarious. I think it's a miscommunication between the engineering staff.
Yeah, we agree.
I think it's nefarious.
I do think that they should be more transparent about it.
That's where I think it's nefarious, because they aren't really obviously doing this. I mean, they don't. So here's what Scooter X in our chat room says. There is a setting on Android and iPhone devices. If you disable then re-enable the setting, it will tell you this. Places you go with your devices, by the way, the setting's on by default, so you have to turn it off and then on again. Then you will see a pop-up that says, places you go with your devices will stop being added to your location and history map. However, but we will from time to time save location information from applications like web searches and maps as you use them. It informs you of this, but it's hidden. So, by the way, Google could easily fix this by bringing that forward a little bit more, right?
Yeah, no, I don't objection to that. I think Stacey and I would agree.
That's where I think it's maybe not nefarious, but it could be an oversight, or it could be they'd prefer not to shake anybody up.
Yeah, so I would kind of look at this. You know how food companies, they love using the word natural, which can hide any number of weird sugars or dyes or other beetle parts. This is that kind of issue where they're like, I'm communicating this. Are they being nefarious or kind of occlusive like the food companies?
Occlusive, maybe that's a better word, yeah.
But the problem is, again, such personal data they're asking of us, they need to be super transparent because otherwise they're going to lose our trust. And if they lose our trust, they're going to lose access to our data and they're going to, we're going to end up with crappier experiences. I mean, I have turned off various personalization experiences and my God, nothing works. It's terrible.
Yes. So Washington Post just put up a story saying that I haven't read it yet. Jack Dorsey is reconsidering how Twitter operates. And
you mean he hasn't already?
Yeah. But I saw that, like the headlines going pursuit. In.
All right. We'll finish this and we'll go check that out.
Oh, sorry.
So the AP, to demonstrate how powerful these other markers can be, asked a postdoc at Princeton, Guna Sakar, that's the one you were talking about, Stacy, to carry an Android phone with location history off. And then he shared the record of his Google account with the AP. Now, even though the phone had location history off, didn't have location off, I should point out. Maybe that's an important distinction. It had location history off. The map included his train commutes on two trips to New York, visits to the High Line, Chelsea Market, Hell's Kitchen, Central Park in Harlem, where somebody licked his neck. To protect his privacy, the AP didn't plot the most telling and frequent marker, his home address, but all that stuff was stored. Maybe the distinction is location history versus location information.
Same. So okay. No, explain that.
So he turned off location history. But also a setting on all phones, iPhone and Android, is location information, period. Location services. Now, most people don't turn that off because then a lot of what you expect your phone to do stops working. Maps don't work. A lot of things don't work. But in that case, you are definitely turning off the location information. I would presume at that point Google's not saving it. So
I would too.
We understand, you and I think, understand the distinction between location services and location history. If location services are turned on, but location history is turned off, but in the course of events, you use apps like Maps that must, of necessity, record your location, some stuff is going to be recorded. Maybe not. I don't know. I think that's your point, Stacy, which is that a geek could be expected to understand this, but normal people could not.
Right.
All right. Something to be aware of. I think Google's best choice at this point would be, and I think they probably will do this, to respond by being clearer about what they're doing.
I mean, that's what everybody should be doing right now.
Yeah. And, you know, I think maybe we've learned this lesson. I hope we have. Be clear.
Well, and Google, if they're not clear, then you have to explain. I mean, if you're not clear, then the assumption's going to be, oh, you are selling my data to the highest bidder or something creepy.
Yeah, you're intentionally obfuscating. Yeah.
So.
Or Google could tell everyone to just chill and take its breathing exercise.
I thought so everyone's reporting this, but I feel like I've seen that before, or maybe it was just somewhere else. Maybe it was another app I've had, but yes, this is a very responsible,
it is
responsive.
It is the case that iPhones do that. So it's just playing catch up. Actually, Apple Watches, not iPhones. Well, maybe iPhones do it too. Apple Watches do this.
I used to have a device called the Spire. And that would do that whenever it felt that I was getting stressed.
I had that. Yeah. It digs into your waist.
Oh, I wore it between my bra. So, but apparently I breathe so slowly that I never needed it. He was like, dude, your respiration is off the charts low. And
very
I was like, oh,
good. Congratulations.
Yeah. I don't know if that's a good thing or not.
You're not hyperventilating. All right. Jack Dorsey says he's rethinking the core. Actually, maybe this is a big deal of how Twitter works. This is the
There's a little bit in it.
This is the breaking story that Jeff just mentioned.
Oh, sorry, I thought you were done with the other story.
I am now. He's rethinking the core parts of the social media platform so it doesn't enable the spread of hate speech, harassment, false news, including conspiracy theories shared by prominent users like Alex Jones and InfoWars. This is an interview he did today with the Washington Post. He said Twitter's experimenting with features that would promote alternative viewpoints in Twitter's timeline to address misinformation, reduce echo chambers. He also expressed openness to labeling bots and redesigning key elements of the social network, including the like button and the way Twitter displays users' follower accounts. If he really is seriously doing this, this is kind of a change for Twitter. They've resisted these things for a long time.
They have. So one solution Twitter's exploring is to surround false tweets with factual content.
That means they've got to decide what false is. Right.
Yeah. Facebook does similar things with the fact checkers, but that means they got to have a system to identify and determine falsity. So they keep on saying, and I agree with them, we don't want them to be the arbiters of truth. But they're all being pushed in that position because people are purposefully, in a manipulative way, putting up falsehoods. And so then they're going to try to put context by giving you something that disagrees with it. Now, we need research to say, does that do any good or not? It may do the opposite. But it's an attempt to address it.
Wait, isn't that what we're against in terms of journalists, which is like silly other side stuff? Like, oh,
good point,
we all think
Stacey.
This way. I'm just...
Good point. Yep.
The sky is green.
The sky has no color. The sky is the sky.
We can't see the sky.
It's interesting because remember, this is, he's talking to the Washington Post because he's in Washington, D.C. to meet with lawmakers. So this may be that his feet are to the fire.
Maybe. Then they label go ahead.
Surely he's having moments of reflection. Even
I think so.
Even he can't be that obtuse.
Yeah.
That's why they hired people. They hired academics to work on the health of public conversation, their impact on it.
This
is another one here, which is Twitter could someday could label automated accounts. I think that's a basic. And there are good automated accounts.
I have an automated account, effectively.
Yeah, there's good ones. There's nothing wrong with that.
My account mostly is just a notice that a show's about to begin.
Yeah. But
and that's automated.
Make it transparent. Make it a feature.
Yeah.
I made a nice bot for you. Remember that? We used to be talking about that. Hey, I make bots.
I made you a nice bot. Do you like
it? I have a bot that tweets out some stuff, but the rest of it's me. And the bot just tweets out like, hey, I just posted this.
A bot or is your... So now what is he going to label yours?
Yeah, I don't know. That's why I'm kind of curious. I'm like, oh dear. I guess I could do another Twitter account.
Yeah, I have a LeoBot account. Maybe I should move that. But the thing is, nothing would ever appear on my real account. Because I don't tweet.
No one would.
I rarely tweet.
So to your point about Washington, Leo, the story says that state legislators in California and federal lawmakers such as Mark Warner have proposed making this a requirement of law, which I'm not going to be crazy about.
What would the requirement be?
That you have to label the bots.
Oh, but just that.
I mean, it goes to the thing we've talked about when it comes to, for example, Google's bot customer service. You know, should you know that it's a bot?
On customer service, yes. I mean,
well, if it's calling to ask you questions, what time do you open? All right, let's take a little break. We have such a great sponsor. Actually, all of our sponsors are great. This is good. This show is going to be really fun because I love all the sponsors, stuff I use all the time. But you're going to love this one. This is the first time we've talked about Masterclass on the show. Do you know about Masterclass?
I
thought we talked about it last week.
Did we? Oh, maybe we did.
I was all excited. I signed up.
Did you? Good.
Yeah. See, it worked already, Leo.
Imagine learning how to cook from, I don't know, Gordon Ramsay or photography from Annie Leibovitz, how to make a joke from Steve Martin, how to use Logic Pro from Armin van Buuren, learning chess from Garry Kasparov, learning how to write comedy from Judd Apatow, learning how to play poker from Daniel Negreanu. I mean, Chris Hadfield teaches space exploration. Where else are you going to get somebody teaching space exploration who's like got the record for the most time in space? 3 times, commander of the International Space Station, teaching space exploration.
The rocket equation, it's a beautiful thing.
And by the way, these are the most beautifully produced videos you will ever see. These are gorgeous. This is the ideal classroom. Teachers who are legendary: Ken Burns, Margaret Atwood, Spike Lee, R.L. Stine, Malcolm Gladwell, Alice Waters. How about dunking? Learn the lessons of dunking. Learn how to shoot a three-point shot from Steph Curry. How about that? Huh? By the way, this isn't just Steph Curry comes out and he does one video. 17 lessons. He breaks down his mechanics, the drills, mental attitude, scoring techniques. There's nowhere else you can learn this. There's a class workbook, and there's a shot tracker spreadsheet that is the one model after one Steph uses. This is an awesome. There is something for everybody. By the way, this makes a great gift. I was going to give it to my son. He said he already signed up. He already had it. Because he's really into cooking. And so there's all this great cooking stuff. Martin Scorsese teaches filmmaking. You know, here's one. This is great. Samuel L. Jackson teaches acting.
Somewhere along. Oh, I thought he was going to teach cursing.
Some personality.
Well, what's cool about this, this is the diner scene from Pulp Fiction. And these are students, and he's coaching them through the scene.
You're the weak, and I'm the tyranny.
What is that? What is he saying?
I'm the evil of the world, and I have dominion over you.
Can you imagine what a thrill it would be to learn to walk through a scene from Pulp Fiction with Samuel L. Jackson? Okay, this is well worth it. Let me tell you, Ron Howard teaches filmmaking. These are online classes. You could take them on the web. There are apps. The best in the world. Each class is shot with really beautiful production quality. I asked the guys, I talked to him, I said, how did you get these people? He said, well, we started with a couple of people, and word of mouth spread. I said, well, you must pay them a lot. I said, no, you know what's interesting? Most of these people, they do it because they want to pass it along. They want to pass on what they know. They don't want what they know to die with them. Herbie Hancock wants you to understand jazz better. Jane Goodall wants you to know about conservation. Deadmau5 wants you to know how to do electronic music production. By the way, I've never seen Deadmau5 without his mouse head. You will in this class.
Cardinal sin of EDM.
Watch! Oh my God, he's taking it off! I can't believe it!
Dive in and say, hey, I'm a trance DJ. And I can hit one note and put a bass drum on it, and that's my tune.
This is really awesome stuff. These guys do this because they really want to pass along what they know, and you are the recipient. Whatever it is you want to do, whether you want to pursue your passion, develop a career, or maybe, you know, frankly, this is so much better than going home and watching TV. Frankly, this is our entertainment at night. We'll go home and watch this stuff. Steve Martin will make you laugh till your sides hurt. Masterclass.com/twig. Right now, you can get a free trial, run of the place for a week, see everything. But that's only going to last for a few more weeks. I think 2 more weeks. So if you've been waiting, if you're interested, this is the time. They will not be offering this 1 week trial in the future. So get it now. Masterclass.com/twig. Although I have to tell you, I didn't even bother. I just signed up. It's like, okay, you got me. It started with Steve Martin.
Sold.
Yeah, sold. This was sold so easy. Oh, isn't it great? What are you taking, Stacey? What?
The Bob Woodward investigative journalism.
Well, of course. Duh. Is it good? Are you learning anything?
Yeah, I've only done one class. So
yeah, the first class is always very friendly and introductory and all that, but they really dig in over time. I think it's amazing. I don't want to put you out of a job, Jeff, but if you can learn journalism from Bob Woodward,
we're admirers of this.
Take advantage of it.
You're at the J School. Yes.
Yeah. Well, I think this is really. This is one of the things, I thank God there's still something to love about the internet. It's one of the things I was always excited about is that you don't have to pay for a college education to get a college education. And now you don't have to, you know, be in Hollywood to learn filmmaking from the best. It's just, it's mind boggling. Helen Mirren teaches acting. Mark Jacobs teaches fashion design. This would be a great gift too for a kid or an adult. Just fascinating. Great stuff. Werner Herzog teaching filmmaking. That's just got to be fun, right?
Like, oh, dear.
That's got to be just like, hello. I'm Werner.
You when you look at a camera.
Meet your
it's
new
kind
instructor.
Kind of scary also.
The legendary director of Grizzly Man.
I'm speaking to filmmakers or future filmmakers. You have to know, I have gone through all of this. I have learned it all on my own.
See, Werner Herzog does not need to do this. He's doing it because he wants you to learn what he's learned. He had to learn on his own. He doesn't want you to. Don't disappoint Werner. Masterclass.com/twig. Masterclass.com/twig. Okay, next we're going to talk about wine. I love this show. Best advertisers ever.
So from the Werner Twitzog Twitter account.
Yeah.
I shot the sous chef, but I did not shoot the maitre d'.
Is that really you, Jeff? That sounds like your sense of humor. That's hysterical.
It's Werner Twitzog.
Twitzog.
Yeah, Twitzog.
Actually, of all the things that Twitter has really given us, including hate, racism, and war, it has also given us a lot of humor.
Yes.
A lot of good. I love the parody.
So September 5 is Tweet Like Werner Herzog Day.
Oh, my goodness. That is awesome.
Now, this is not his real account, we should say.
No. I'll be right. Very clear. But it's obvious about that. No,
it's a parody account. Yeah.
Yes. Well, do you know the account 9?
No.
Oh, it's one of my absolute favorite accounts. It's a 9 quarterly. If it's is it slash 9? 9 quarterly. And very wry, very Werner Herzog. I'm trying to see an example. Now it's some.
We got to share great Twitter accounts. That's what we got to do. Oh, NEIN, not NINE.
NEIN, sorry.
Oh, okay.
That makes a big difference.
No.
Example. A gentle reminder about the enemy of the people. It's usually the people.
Okay. All right, I follow Kim Kierkegaard-Dashian.
Yeah.
She's got has a book coming out. Oh, it's out. My Beautiful Despair, The Philosophy of Kim Kierkegaard-Dashian. It's a bizarre mashup of Kierkegaard and Kim Kardashian, as you might have guessed. That's harder to say than it is to read. And here's 9. I'm just here for the degradation of the discourse. I get it. A gentle reminder about the enemy of the people. It's usually the people. I didn't understand.
See, sorry, I did. I ruined the gag, yeah, which is what I do to get.
Okay.
Let's talk about breathing. Breathing, baby. Breathing. Explain.
Grammar, syntax, and cynicism walk into a bar. Bartender. What wouldn't it be?
Sorry. No, that's actually funny.
So, this should be. Actually, let's do it. It's time for the Google changelog.
The Google changelog.
We decided
memories.
Stacy joined us and made the show whole again, we lost, of course, one of the founding members of the show because nothing happened to her. She just decided she was tired of us, of me and Jeff, just as you will someday, Stacy. And now I've forgotten her name.
Gina Trapani.
Gina Trapani.
Trapani.
I'm sure that was, you know.
Age. It's a terrible thing.
No, it wasn't age. It was, I'm upset. So Gina did every week the Google changelog, and a number of people have come to me since saying that's the one thing I really miss from This Week in Google, the Google changelog. So let's do the Google changelog. These are new things you can do with Google this week, and we'll start with the breathing exercise. So you have to search for breathing exercise, right? Is this a Google search? Let's try it. Oh, look, there it is. If you search for breathing exercise, you get a 1-minute breathing exercise. This is in the Google search. Bring awareness to your breath. Breathe in. Is there any voice in this?
No.
Breathe out.
Well, I already breathed out. I'm already
okay,
out of sync.
So you're no good at
this. I'm out of sync. I can't do it. No, I'm bad at this.
So is that it? This is it?
This is it.
Does it keep going forever?
I think it's a continuation of the nanny set state. They're even telling you when to breathe, and they're going to record your breath.
It's like a minute. It's a minute, you guys. Okay. Just relax.
But you don't need this because...
I can't. This is making me nervous.
Stacy does this without trying.
I do. I am in such a zen state. Jeff, I'm the anti-Jeff.
Yes, you
are. All right,
you
ready for some more Google changelog bits?
Yes,
bits and
please.
Pieces. We talked about this on Windows Weekly. If you use Google Chrome, they're adding support for Windows 10's built-in push notifications. In the past, Google Chrome would give you notifications, but there'd be kind of weird googly notifications. Now they're going to use Windows 10's built-in feature. This is out. It's in Chrome 68, but it may not be in yours yet. It just takes a little time sometimes to get activated. Also in the Google change log, did you know that for Louis Armstrong's birthday, they commissioned an updated recording of Tiger Wrath. I'm sorry, Rag. Wrath is the Werner Herzog version. 117 years ago, Louis Armstrong was born. Google Arts and Culture and the record label Deutsche Grammophon restored the Tiger Rag. Shall we hear the Tiger Rag? This is
sure.
Actually was recorded in 1934 in a studio in Paris for a gramophone. Whoops, I pressed the wrong button. Let me press the right button here. Ladies and gentlemen, I give you the Tiger Rag. Okay, that's enough. I'm exhausted. That's the opposite of the breathing exercise.
I was going to say, actually, that's a man who has mastered his breathing.
Yes. Yeah. Google does this. I didn't know they did this, but they do a kind of zeitgeist, weekly zeitgeist of Google search trends. A trek through search trends starring popular firms and films and crocular shoes. Patrick Stewart, we learned last week, is going to return to Star Trek. Searches for Crocs going out of business went up 4,700% this week, signaling that fashion offenders everywhere were in a panic. They eventually breathed a sigh of relief after the company confirmed it's here to stay despite closing down a few manufacturing facilities. Whew. Search interest in Crocs surpassed search interest in Uggs by 180% over the past week. Top regions searching for the famous rubber shoes include West Virginia, Maine, and North Carolina. For some reason, I guess because a new category was announced for the Oscars dedicated to popular film. A top searched question this week, how many Oscar categories are there? Bring it on, people in Georgia, Louisiana, and D.C., particularly interested in the NFL's announcement that male cheerleaders will be on the sidelines of the Los Angeles Rams and New Orleans Saints this season. And finally, now the city has decided, New York City has decided to cap the number of rideshare licenses. People searched, asking about the number of rideshare vehicles on the road overall. Search interest in Uber still 100% higher on average than search interest in Lyft. They also saw a rise in searches for how to make the most money with ride-sharing apps. Google One is now going wide. Now, I haven't got the invitation yet. I applied for this. This is a new storage plan kind of to take the place of or as an upgrade to Google Drive.
As I think it's gone for new users, which is
That's why I don't have it. Oh, because I'm not a new user. Here's the Google One soundtrack.
No, it says it's still coming soon.
More space for what matters. Okay, and then a lot of pictures. So that's, I saw the story.
If you have a paid Google Drive storage plan, you'll automatically be upgraded to Google One over the coming months.
We just get it automatically. Okay, and if you want to apply.
And you're going
to
get other things with it now.
People in the chat room.
Like hotel discounts.
Yeah, lots more stuff. People in the chat room say they have been upgraded.
Oh.
So, plus you'll get a team of Google experts 24/7 to answer any questions you have. You also get credits on Google Play, deals on hotels found in Google Search, and keep an eye out for Google Store and Google Express benefits in the coming months. You can also share your plan with up to 5 additional family members. So this is Google One. If you want to know more, you can go to the Google One website.
Chat room, how do you know you're upgraded? You just go to Google Drive?
Does it play that song for you?
It's the same price, I think, as I was paying for Drive, $1.99 for 100 gigabytes, $2.99 for 200 gigabytes. Oh, they've doubled everything. I get it. And I was paying at $10 a month for 1 terabyte. Now I get 2 terabytes.
Uh-huh.
Existing 1 terabyte plans will be upgraded to 2 terabytes at no cost.
And see, Pruitt said he got an email for the upgrade.
Yeah. So if you didn't yet put your name in for it, google.com/getupdates, and you could put your name in.
Thank you, Ed.
But I understand it's been rolling out this week. All of a sudden, Google One. And let's see, a couple other little stories. Google services, Google Home has now added 2 new music services, Pandora Premium and Deezer. The 5 Deezer users are cheering right now.
I have a friend who is a Deezer user. They exist.
So you can listen on your Google Home. And Google has added a news feature to Google Home. So this is, I think, coincides with the release of the Lenovo Smart Displays. So you can choose your preferred news source from hundreds of national and local broadcasters, CNBC, CNN, Cheddar, and more. All you do is you say, hey, you know who, what's the news? And if you want to go...
Are you using your Lenovo thingy?
I didn't buy one. Jason has a review unit. I haven't decided yet. I'm not sure. I have a Google Home Max, which I love, and that's probably enough for me. If you want,
Kevin loves his.
Yeah, the sound is great in the Max. He loves his Lenovo?
No, he loves his Lenovo. He okay. says he uses it more than any other device in his home right now.
I was a believer when I got my Echo Show. I like having a screen on, so maybe I will get one. It's not too expensive. It's actually
has Kevin written that up about how he uses it?
Yes. We just published it today on stacyonioT.com.
You're welcome.
There you go.
You're welcome.
I am a terrible self-promoter, I'll be honest. But there you go.
You can now also drill more deeply with news. You can ask the assistant, what's the news on the women's national soccer team? What's the latest on NASA? And if you have a smart display like the Lenovo, it'll also find relevant videos on YouTube. On assistant speakers like Google Home, it will read out excerpts from news articles from a growing list of publishers. So good news. If you like the news, you get all the news that's fit to listen to on your Google Home. And that is the Google Changelog.
Cue.
I hope you enjoyed this reprise. Let us know if you want us to continue that. I think that's useful.
I think it is.
New stuff from
Google. Yeah, I think it's super
useful. A lot of stuff.
Yeah. Oh, I remember what happened. Jason Howell got the Lenovo smart screen, smart display. But his daughters, it has no way to restrict YouTube access, and his young daughters just basically used it as an endless supply of questionable YouTube content.
Uh-oh.
Ah.
So he disabled it.
That makes sense.
Okay. Our show today brought to you by wine. Would you like a drink? Here's a drink. I'll have the. It's 5 o'clock. It's after 5 o'clock.
Almost.
As Wink. My father would say, the sun is over the yardarm.
The sun is over the yardarm. I had a grandfather that said that as well. must have been a
Time
thing
to
in
the break
50s.
Out the...
Wink yep. is the best way to discover new wines you will love. We get our Wink box every month for new wines. You start with the Wink palate quiz. You go through the palate profile quiz. Answer some questions about what you like. How do you take your coffee? Do you like salt, citrus, mushrooms, truffles, that kind of thing? And then they'll customize your Wink playlist. You can choose there are 4 bottles, all red, all white, or any mix thereof. Each month, new delicious wines. Of course, in the summer, you got to get the insanely popular Summer Water Rosé. It's so refreshing and delicious. Paul Thurrott would turn it into a slushy. If you have a slushy machine, try that. I'll show you. They partner with local artists for the labels. This is our box today. This is one of the wines. Tempo Vero. It's a 2016 Negro Amaro Salento with wild beaches, ancient forests, and tempting local cuisine. The increasingly important wine region of Salento is nestled in the heel of Italy's boot. And this is a red. I love Italian reds, but I'd never heard of Salento. So that's the whole point of this. This is a southern Italian wine. Let's see what else we've got. A Malbec. We love those. Probably Lisa put that on the list. You could select wines and repeat wines you really love. This is from Mendoza, Argentina, the home of the best Malbecs. Oh, I love this. This is an Albarino Field Theory. One of my favorite labels from Wink. And I've loved every one of these. This is, and don't you love the bottles? They're very beautiful. This is almost clear. You could see the beautiful color of the wine. Albarino, this is a 2016 Albarino, which is an Italian-style wine, but this one's from Lodi. No membership fees. You could skip any month. Oh, good. This is the one I keep. Shipping is covered. If you don't like a bottle, they'll send you a new one. You know, questions asked. You keep the old one, too, because, of course, you're not going to mail that back. These are wines curated to your taste. By the way, the more wines you try and rate, the more personalized they'll get. This is my favorite. This is, I think it's Australian, Blaufränkisch. 2016, this is the Field Theory Blaufränkisch. This wine that blew me away when I first tasted it. It's from Paso Robles. Why settle for the same old bottle of wine? Go to Wink. You get wine for a couple of meals a month, a wine to bring friends when you go to dinner, and maybe a wine to put down in your wine cellar. Start building your collection. This Blaufränkisch would be fantastic to put down. Wink, W-I-N-C. Go to trywink.com/twig. And as a little incentive, we'll get you $20 off that first shipment. You can pause at any time, cancel at any time. But I have a feeling four is just right, I find. Just the right amount of wine every month. W-I-N-C, trywink.com/twig for $20 off your first shipment. trywink.com/twig. Unbox, uncork, and enjoy. All right, now I have to put this wine away because it's not 5 o'clock here. And I still have to do a show. I'm so glad I got the Blaufränkisch. That is so good. I never had tried that before. And the Albarino I've always loved. No oaky shards in my box. Somebody's saying oaky shards. Well, if you like oaky shards, I'm not a fan of oak. So but they have some very nice shards that are not oaky. Maybe we should make this the
our theme.
Your theme ad song. Music.
Would you like this to be the theme song?
I'm all for it.
For This Week in Google? I think this would be a great theme. Instead of those fluty things. It's from 1934. I think we could probably. This should be our theme. What do you think? I'm gonna vote. The question is on the floor. Will we make Louis Armstrong's Tiger Rag the new theme of This Week in Google? All in favor say aye.
Aye. Anything's better than what we have.
Aye. I'll take that as a yes.
What is our current theme song?
You haven't heard it?
I'm sure I have. I just don't know. Yes, let's change it.
Yeah.
Leo picked it in a moment of weakness. Google's public.
I don't care. This show isn't going to last. Plenty of theme is fine. Jeez.
Exactly.
We'll do 10 episodes. It'll be over.
Exactly. What did I know? By the way, you like our new Galaxy Home device? They call it the Galdron. It's got Bixby built in. No, that's a Weber Jr. That's not. It does kind of look like it, though.
It totally looks like it.
8.8. What? Go ahead.
I was going to say, Kevin calls it the fondue pot.
It kind of looks like let me show you the Galaxy. This is a part of the big Note 9 announcement. I don't think a lot of people really paid much attention to the new watch or the Galaxy Home. This is partly because the Galaxy Home runs Bixby, which I don't think anybody really wants, because Bixby doesn't really do anything. In fact, it's an odd choice because at least up to now, Bixby really has only given you commands that work on a phone, like open photos.
Oh, but they built smart. So they actually, that is also a SmartThings hub.
So
they could be moving into the smart home era.
Yeah, that makes sense. So, because that's the idea behind Apple's HomePod as well, is it's a hub.
Yeah, but their hub is kind of pointless because it only has Bluetooth and Wi-Fi. It doesn't have Zigbee or Z-Wave.
Does this have Zigbee and Z-Wave? It's like a Samsung SmartThings? Okay. And they've said that we are going to put more intelligence in Bixby. I guess I would expect that Viv is going to get in there. Viv is the follow-up to Siri. When Siri was sold to Apple, the Siri guys left and started Viv.ai, then later sold it to Samsung. So it would be my guess that Bixby 2.0 is going
to be... Viv is kind of like a way to approach programming to let you pull APIs together. It's not exactly the same thing
as Siri. It's not an AI?
It is a way to use AI. It's an AI that recognizes... That ties things to apps. So it's going to recognize your voice command. And it does it intelligently so an individual doesn't have to program that. So you don't have to say when you recognize a statement, this is what you need to open.
It's basically adding a conversational interface to everything.
Yes. Got it. It's a pretty ambitious project.
Oh. So
I wrote about it way back in the day.
Yeah. They're now part of Samsung. So I was wrong. I guess it's not Viv. But Bixby 2.0 is supposedly... going to be able to make restaurant reservations, book rides with Uber, find nearby concerts, all stuff Bixby doesn't do now.
Yeah, Viv lets them scale that. So in a way, it's going to we'll see if actually Viv is useful or not.
Viv makes sense with a smart home, right? Because it would give you a voice interface to all the devices in your smart home. But that would require that those devices enable it, include Viv.
Yeah, I think so. But Viv actually is useful anywhere because it basically... It automates the adding of APIs to things. I mean, making API calls and bringing those things together.
Cool. Kill. 8.8.8 is 8. It's Google's public DNS, 8.8.8.8. It is 8 years old. And I probably should have made this part of the changelog because Google says the anniversary was August 12th at 12:30 a.m. UTC, which is... 8 years, 8 months, 8 days, and 8 hours since the original announcement. Oh, boy. Google chose the occasion to talk about 8.8.8.8. 10% of all internet users use it. It's the largest public DNS resolver. Wow. That's pretty amazing. It's used by Google Station and Indian Railway locations. ISPs in Africa and Southeast Asia use it instead of their own DNS servers.
And everybody in the U.S. uses it so they don't get DNS hijacked by their ISP.
Right.
Yay!
And this,
I switched to 1.1.1.1.
Which is another one. That's from Cloudflare.
Cloudflare, yes.
Yeah, Quad 1. So Quad 8s, this picture kind of says it all. This is in Turkey when the Turkish government was shutting down internet services right and left. Protesters actually, this is something you don't expect to see painted on the side of a building. DNS colon 8.8.8.8. One way to get through the Turkish firewall. That's kind of cool.
Or terribly sad, depending on how we look at it.
Or sad. Yeah, Turkey's going through now a financial crisis thanks to the authoritarian rule of Recep Erdogan.
Erdogan. Is that how you say Erdogan?
Erdogan.
Yes.
Okay.
You got it.
Google wants to help your boss spy on you, according to the outline. I'm not going to give this much credence. It's just a patent. Yeah. This is link bait, right?
Exactly. Yeah. All
right. It is, although, okay, I don't want my boss to do this, but I would actually like to know what helps make me more productive. And maybe it's because I work for myself I am kind of freaked out in... Not freaked out. I would be excited because they're talking about using signals from personal devices and things around, not just your computer. If they could actually pull all that kind of data together, that would mean that presumably we've got like a data schema that we can use and all kinds of universal things that we don't currently have today. So,
well, and frankly, this that's a bit of a leap for the outline to say it's for your boss. It's anybody who wants to make work more efficient, to study work patterns, workflows. Not necessarily bad.
I mean, how the heck else am I going to hack my work week?
Yeah,
I mean,
man.
My gosh.
Yeah. Let's see. Fortnite's Android beta now available for non-Samsung phones. Boy, that was a brief exclusive.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, this is the one that you have to sideload. Epic says we're not going to offer it on the Google Play Store.
Is that, and we never talked about that part of it. Is it just because Epic is cheap?
Yeah.
Is it,
yeah.
Is that it?
They don't want to give Google their 30%. They
but
have
they
to give
it to Apple?
They have to. There's no choice. There's no sideloading on iPhones.
Oh, so they're, okay. Because, yeah, this whole story confused me, and I didn't want to think about it.
I think that.
Yep, I agree.
I don't even think this is an uncharitable way to interpret it. I think the only interpretation is Epic doesn't want to give Google its 30%, as, you know, every app on the Play Store does. Android does allow you to, you know, there's that switch in your security settings that turns off the requirement that you download from the Play Store. It lets you to download from third parties. In recent versions of Android, it switches back on. You switch it off for one download and it switches back on, which is a good thing because... Basically, Epic's greed is in the face of the security of users, because while sideloading from Epic is not a bad thing, what if some malicious website puts up a Fortnite APK and says, right, get it here, and you download it, but it's not Fortnite, it's malware.
And right, this is a bunch of, I mean, this is, kids play this game, and kids, I mean, good Lord, if you've ever seen like a teenager, oh, middle school kid's computer, it is not pretty.
Oh, I know. I have a teenager, and I have anti-malwared it many, many times. I think we've kind of got it pretty well locked down now. I haven't had problems in a while.
Cross your fingers.
It was training. It was simply saying, Michael, before you download something, you need to check with me, really, to make sure, because some of these sites you're getting stuff from are not safe. And he's really good. He actually now says, okay, I want to download Five Nights at Freddy, the fan fiction version. Is it okay to get this? And I'll go look at the site and make sure it's okay before he does.
And how often is it malware?
You know, it's usually not malware. It's usually adware.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And spyware and stuff like that. It installs, you know, things like Ask Toolbar and stuff. Stuff that you really don't want to computer just because it bogs it down. But it's not technically malware.
And yeah, my daughter, I've trained her, like, back in the Minecraft days, was a wonderful intro to, hey, let's talk to me before you download those mods.
But isn't that the argument for a parent being involved in this? And unless a kid
it's
like,
really important.
Unless a kid's really unruly, then there's other ways around it. It's a great thing to do. You have the conversation, and a good any normal kid will say, well, I want to keep my computer usable. So they'll ask. Yeah, Minecraft mods was a big source of problems for Michael. Yeah. But it worked, right?
It did. I mean, yes. And although now, whenever any weird box comes up, even if it's just like a normal, like, do you want to load the Windows update? She doesn't have Windows updates, but
it's good for her to check. I don't mind.
She's like, I don't mind either. Yeah. I just think it's kind of cute.
Well, and it helps that you have that rack behind you that you can torture her on.
That is not a torture rack.
I know what it is. It's a Pilates machine.
If this were a different show, I would tell you all about the crazy class I took, but I'm not going to.
I have a Cadillac reformer at home. And you know what I love? Do you have the springboards that you can jump on it?
The jump board? Yeah.
Yeah, I love the jump board.
It's fun.
So much. I think we talked about that before. It's really fun.
Jeff is like, what is happening?
Jeff is exactly the person who should be doing Pilates, by the way.
Oh, you should, Jeff.
You would love it.
It would be so good for you.
It's good.
And you can be crazy like competitive, too, if you want.
It's good for elderly people.
Okay, I wasn't going to say that.
I include myself in that, since we're the same age. I try, because you want to keep balance and flexibility starts to go as you get older. And you start falling on your head.
That was cruel, Leo.
It was. I'm like, wow, normally those comments come from me.
I'm taking my leave because the pain is coming up.
Oh, I'm so sorry. God. So you still have a headache from it?
No, it's just the pain of the thing. It's been 12 hours.
Oh, my God.
I also banged up my arm and my leg. And
oh, I'm so sorry.
I'm just a klutz.
No,
a
Pilates would help.
Yeah. I'll find ways to sprain something in Pilates.
And this, I hear the native sounds of Times Square.
Oh, sorry,
Square.
New York.
Google, according to Sarah Perez at TechCrunch, will lose about $50 million in fees with Epic's move in 1 year.
Let us just note, if we may, for one moment, that as you did a moment ago, Apple does not allow this. Google does. Google is a more open system.
That's right.
Below Europe.
That's right. And Google's doing, I think, a good thing, which is when you search for Fortnite, I guess this is good. What do you think? It's the first time Google's ever done it, according to TechCrunch. You will get a search result that says Fortnite Battle Royale by Epic Games is not available on Google Play.
So don't download what you see. Yeah, this is great. Yeah. Smart.
Yeah. And then I wonder if... Boy, you know, the right thing to do would be to have a link to the official download. I don't know if they'll do that.
Well, I don't know if I would do that either. I'd be like, screw you. And I know,
but the right thing to do would be have that link so that people at least will get it from the official site.
Oh, see, they do the right thing, and then you say, well, it's not enough right. You got to be more right. They're a company.
You've got to turn the other cheek and be the better person.
It costs them nothing to put that link there, and it makes their users more secure.
It costs them $50 million.
They already lost the money. It's already done.
Because it enables the next guy to do the same trick.
Oh, I might encourage people, I guess.
Yeah, if other people
would
do that. Yeah.
I still think you should think about the users. Consider the users.
They are thinking about the users. That's why they put the link in there to explain what's happening.
Okay.
I mean... You can turn the other cheek. You don't have to bake a cake and serve it to him. You know what I'm saying?
Well said. Too long for a show title, but very nice.
There you go.
So I know Jeff is very interested in this story, so I'm not going to frustrate him any longer. Campbell Brown speaking to The Australian, a Rupert Murdoch-owned paper in oddly enough, Australia, said, according to The Australian, Mark doesn't care about publishers, but is giving me a lot of leeway and concessions to make these changes. We will help you revitalize journalism. In a few years, the reverse looks like I'll be holding your hands with your dying business like in a hospice. We are no longer interested in talking to you about your traffic or referrals. That is the old world. There's no going back.
So, may I?
Yes.
I've been in the room with Campbell when she's basically had similar talks. And I think they were off the record, but fine, I'll violate that for the sake of this. Where let's first do a little bit of a caveat here. The Australian is owned by Murdoch. Murdoch goes after the platforms in every possible way.
And this could conceivably be one of those ways.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so when Campbell says these things, she does tough love, and she tells the publishers, all you want to care about is getting clicks and links. Those days are over. Sorry, that's just over for everything. We're going for, meaningful engagements between people, and we're not going to care about those metrics anymore, and you're going to keep trying to manipulate, and that's over. That's tough love. And she'll say... Because she does. I care about journalism. I want you to succeed. And what I fear is that I'm going to end up sitting there, and I presume this is when she said it, holding your hand in the hospice. Because if you don't wise up, just like Richard Gingras from Google can be very tough on publishers and say, get your damned acts together. And I, as a journalism professor, I'm tough on publishers saying, get your damned acts together. She sometimes says, get your damned acts together. Or else I'm going to find myself... nursing you in the hospice. This, even my friend Jay Rosen, who can be critical of Facebook, he also understands the Australian media market. And on Twitter, he was saying he ain't buying this story.
Yeah. Well, here's the other shoe from New York Magazine, their select all page. SEO is back. Thank God. And I thought this was quite well said by Brian Feldman. Referring to this meeting with The Australian, his response is, great. That old world absolutely sucked. and it made the internet ecosystem a discernibly worse place. Sometime around 2012, the ecology of digital publishing underwent an epical shift. Facebook overtook Google as the top traffic source on the web. And so as a result, you got link bait. You got garbage that was designed to drive traffic from Facebook instead of what we had before, which was search engine optimization, formatting web content so it would rank highly within search engines. He submits that that's a better way of doing it, that this whole link baity thing, 21 pictures that will restore your faith in humanity, was really all about getting Facebook clicks and really wasn't about providing what people want. Now, he points out, you know, the problem with SEO is, you know, you're going to have, you're going to title your article, "What Time is the Super Bowl?" because that's what people are going to search. But that's not so bad because, in fact, that's the answer to a question a lot of people are searching for. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that the clickbait, the attention-based advertising model corrupted us all.
Yeah.
We started at media and a scaled market, as I said earlier. Abundance volume goes up, price goes down, desperation goes up. And that's where we are. We've got to come up with new models based on value.
Yeah. And SEO is closer to that. He says the mechanics of SEO are clear, far more than the mechanics of human emotions. Far better or worse, SEO forced publishers to focus on providing their readers with relevant information. Social optimization for platforms like Facebook forced publishers to make their content evocative, incendiary, and interactive. What
is there another way? Because, like, why are you a journalist? One, service, right? You do want to give people information. But two, you want to tell stories that matter and that affect either, maybe it's local, maybe you want to draw attention to something like civil forfeiture. So I would argue that we don't have a way, the evocative stories, those kinds of headlines can drive you to things like babies dying in the hospital poor hair. So I'm not saying that I love listicles, believe me, but I think it's a little bit, it's more subtle. And I used to hate doing cheesy headlines. That's why I was like, oh, I don't want to do another cheesy headline. But I was like, you know what? If I stand behind my story and I really want to people to read it, I'm going to have to go with the dead baby. And
there's more reasons to do link bait than just generating revenue and traffic.
Well, it's also, yeah. I mean, I wrote a piece for The Atlantic arguing that the platforms are not publishers, and they have put on a rather flowery headline about the internet is wonderful for democracy. And comes, I said, why can't we be blunter? Can't we just say what I'm actually saying? And so now it's platforms are not publishers, right? It's more provocative and it's also more accurate to what I'm saying.
Yeah, but you might have gotten more hits the other way.
No, the other one was too flowery. It was boring.
There's also the issue that a lot of journalists don't write their headlines very well.
Write their headlines at all.
Well, a lot of bloggers have to write their,
bloggers
more
do.
And more they do.
Yeah.
And you know, some people are really terrible at it. What?
The lead is dead. Right? Now with Ultimate Space, people are going on and on and on and on before they get to the damn point. What happened to the nut graph?
Let me read the first sentence of your article. Platforms are not publishers. Google, Facebook, Twitter, and the internet are not media. There is something new we do not yet fully understand. Well said. You ought to teach journalism.
Thank you. Notice how I got this cover plug in here.
That's the nut, right? Right there. That's the
lead and the nut.
The lead, the nut, and all the rest.
When I was editing our new writers, I was constantly like, let me explain this concept to you. But, you know.
It's actually, I think there's an answer to both, which is consider the reader, period.
Yes.
You want to give the reader something they're looking for. You want to engage the reader with something, you know, that engages them. Consider their time. Don't compel them to read 1,500 words to figure out what the hell you're talking about. Consider the reader. Serve the reader. That's, you know, it's funny because that was always what I told people in broadcasting and in podcasting. Serve your audience. Think about your audience. Give them what they want, what they need. And inevitably, success will follow. I don't mean chasing hits. That's different.
Well, my audience might want naked pictures of Jennifer Lawrence, but I'm not going to give it to them.
Well, but what would serve them?
Well,
I don't mean pander to their I don't mean pander to their lower urges. I mean, what's going to really serve them, fill them? Give, you know.
So that's why I started a whole degree in social journalism. So we listen to the community first. We understand their needs. We reflect their needs. And then we can figure out what journalism is.
Not that complicated, actually.
No, but we're very bad at listening.
Well, humans are, because humans listen to themselves first. You know, we're the first customer.
What did you say?
Huh?
What did you say?
You talking to me? Why is lead spelled L-E-D-E and not L-E-A-D?
I think it has to do with the printing machines. Jeff?
Yes, you're right.
Is that true? Ha-ha! I win the journalism prize. Nothing.
Would you... nothing. That's the journalism prize. Nothing.
Is it? That's why you put in things that otherwise wouldn't be in there, so you know they're wrong. Like TK for to come.
I knew that.
Oh, so you know they're wrong.
So you know they're wrong.
I never knew what TK... I knew what to do. I knew to do TK, but I never knew what it meant. It means to come. But you won't write to come because you spell checker. When you're programming and you are creating a list of things that you need to work on, you put three bangs, bang, 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 and then it's easy to search for because it's not programming. TK might be, in fact, but bang, bang, bang's not. Lead is intentionally misspelled so that
it's specific to what it is.
Yeah.
It is. Well, it's
also,
not misspelled,
it's not lead,
so it stands out.
Because the press was made out of lead.
Yeah, but there's some. Hold on, now I got
it. No, don't look it up, please.
I'm going. Okay. I'm going crazy now. So I'm really going full Gutenberg. Now I'm reading about a wonderful book about Aldus Manutius,
Bound in Venice. Oh, Manutius
was the greatest artist of book printing right after Gutenberg.
We know his name. Amazing. Do you know why we know his name?
Why do we know his name?
Because PageMaker, which was the very first desktop publishing program widely used on Macintoshes with laser writers, was from a company called Aldus.
And that was named after him?
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
I know.
And the new WordPress is called Gutenberg.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I feel good
again. Oh, it is a deliberate misspelling.
Yeah. That makes sense.
Oh, wait. There's two versions.
Me, Stacey.
No, there's two versions of the etymology, you guys. Wow.
Lidi.
Wow.
Lidi. The Lidi has been rewritten and the headline changed. It's an alteration of lead, L-E-A-D, not lead, L-E-A-D. Well, look at, by the way, sorry to say, the declining use over time of the word lead.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
See, I told you it's dying, Stacey.
There you go.
And Merriam-Webster answers the question, why do we bury the lead?
Because journalists are wordy and don't know what they want to say. You always bury the lead when you don't actually know what you're writing about. Okay.
So did I do that conversation stopper?
I think went right down a rat hole. That's where I was, and I was looking.
Yeah, this is how did Leo say he was going to react when the show stopped? He doesn't have another change log.
I did the change log already.
No.
Damn it!
This is when we play our ragtime, our Fox. Wait, what was it?
Yeah, Louis Armstrong. Honestly, that is definitely Karsten. Make it so. Except, are there?
There might be some rights issues.
Rights issues. It is 1934. It's post Mickey Mouse. Tiger rag.
That's what it was. Okay. Well, what other tech news do we have?
I think that would be such a good show open. Why don't you think so? John Slanina, Jammer B, shaking his head no.
Maybe he's worried about you dancing.
He says it's you can't John's change it. You can change the theme. People get used to it over time. Our theme is so god awful. John apparently is the only person.
Wait for episode 500.
Let me hear the end, because we could end the show with it too.
That's Stacy getting excited
That's
about something.
Awesome. No. Yeah, oh. All right. That's our theme. That's done. Facebook buys Vidpresso's team and tech to make video interactive. Vidpresso is used actually by local TV stations to put polls up on the screen, to put interactivity into television shows. Clients include KTXL, I think that's Salt Lake, Univision, BuzzFeed, Turner Sports, NASDAQ, TED, NBC, and others. So get ready for polls in Facebook video. This is, we got a hot war going on because YouTube is now offering money to its YouTube stars if they promise to promote and use nude features, including paid memberships and in the enhanced chat, and put their videos on YouTube first and don't mention those other people. Casey Neistat, who is a major YouTuber with millions of fans, said, if YouTube's not scared of Twitch, they should be now. That's because Twitch and Patreon both offer subscription selling to fans who want, you know, selling subscriptions to fans who want early access to programming. Casey's still on YouTube, though. He said that back in May, but he's still on YouTube. YouTube is making it easier for creators to sell merch. This feels like something they should have announced at VidCon, but it's just coming out now.
Yeah, exactly. Well, the merch stuff, I think that they might have.
The Super Chat, they did announce at VidCon, I believe. It's a lot of, you know, Twitch Chat turns out to be its secret sauce, because that's, you can be in chat and donate and stuff like that directly into chat. And it really gives, it's funny because we've had chat since 1994 during all of our live programming. And I always knew, I didn't have any of those fancy features, but I always knew that having a live audience be able to give direct feedback to the content creators was valuable. YouTube has in the past...
1994 at Tech TV?
No, on the radio. A radio show on KGO in San Francisco. I had a live chat room. Cool. The original moderator of that was a guy who was at the time working in magazines named Robert Scoble.
Really?
Yeah. He was my first
chat mod. Things have changed.
Now he's driving a Model 3 across the United States trying to flee.
His past,
yes.
Did you see the story about Messenger Kids? And I don't really care about the passphrase stuff, but I was surprised that they had such an increase in downloads. So I thought
Facebook was discontinuing it. I guess not.
So this TechCrunch story says, according to data from Sensor Tower, Messenger Kids saw a sizable increase in installs at the beginning of early June and just has now passed 1.4 million downloads across iOS and Android.
Wow.
And its daily downloads are around 3x as they were at the end of May. And now they're making it easier for kids to add their friends by creating these four-word passphrases like dog, bite, shark.
In order to be the friend, you have to know it.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah.
I don't know why. I thought that they admitted that it was a bad idea, but I guess not. Messenger Kids is bigger than ever, it sounds like.
Well, I don't know if it's bigger than ever. It's 1.3 million.
But you could be 6 years old and use it. That's 1.3 million little kids.
Yeah. Yes. Well, and they're saying that parents like this because you can monitor your kids' conversation.
Yeah.
And control approvals, but right. I don't know.
MIT Technology Review says Facebook's app for kids should freak parents out.
I don't like it.
Yeah.
I mean, my daughter does talk on Hangouts with her friends, so it's not that different. But I don't want my kid on Facebook if they don't, like, I just don't want them to be associated with Facebook forever, really. Yeah. Like, if they can avoid that as long as possible, go for it.
Yeah, technically you can't. Of course, if you're under 13, you can't sign up for Facebook. But according to a poll by Facebook and the National PTA, 3 out of 5 American parents said their under 13-year-olds use messaging apps, social media, or both. And that's Facebook used that as justification to create Messenger Kids. Look, they're going to do it. We should give them a safe space to do it.
Right. And I tend to agree with, I mean, I had explained to my daughter that she could call her friend while we were in Seattle for a month on the phone.
On
and
the
she
phone?
Was just, she was baffled.
What's that, Mama? What's a phone? Well, you go down to the corner by the bodega. There's a booth there. Here's three quarters.
But yeah, I mean, she doesn't, her friend doesn't have her own cell phone yet. My daughter doesn't even like her cell phone.
Right.
So
I don't like to make phone calls. I kind of understand.
I get it. I'm just kind of like, I think back to how many hours as at her age that I spent on the phone talking to my friends, doing three-way calls with my friends, you know, just ridiculous amounts of time.
DEF CON and Black Hat were this past weekend. An 11-year-old changed the result of Florida's presidential vote with the Florida Secretary of State's website. Apparently not too hard to hack. My favorite, though, is Rachel Toback's video. Let me see if I can find this. Of hacking a voter machine that is still used in 18 states. Here's her tweet. A DEF CON hacking conference just learned how easy it is to physically gain admin access on a voting machine used in 18 states. This just takes a couple of minutes, so watch.
I'm very concerned for our upcoming election because this voting machine is used in 18 different states, and it's extremely easy to get admin access on this machine. So let me show you how quick it is. It's about a little under 2 minutes.
We should point out this is the machine in the booth, so she's in a voting booth right now. And so anybody in a voting booth, which of course is invisible, you know, to people because you're privately voting, could do this.
To do this bad actor would be to open up this machine by pressing this button right here.
This button right here.
When it's off, removing the card reader.
Remove the card reader.
Removing this. You don't need any tools to do this. Unplugging this. Again, you don't need any tools to do this.
Just unplug that.
Turning it on. All you have to do is pick this lock here with a ballpoint pen.
There is a lock, but apparently not too hard to unlock.
Press the red button.
So she's now rebooted the voting machine.
Let it boot up here.
This is what takes the longest, by the way. This is a Premier Election Systems voting machine. And, you know, unfortunately, a lot of these machines, I don't know about this particular one, don't have...
So it's loading what they call a secure voting terminal right now?
Paper trails. And when she says bad actor, she doesn't mean Nicolas Cage. She means somebody, probably Russian. Bad guy, right? Or gal.
And here we're going to see a couple of error messages, and all you have to do to bypass those error messages is just click cancel...
This is the best part.
And okay.
Cancel and okay. And now she's in the admin settings.
Admin under 2 minutes.
You can change votes, add votes, subtract votes.
Oh, jeez.
Jeez Louise. That was Voting Village at DEF CON. They had a bunch of voting machines, and they let the hackers have at it. What fun.
There was a cyber attack in California against...
The Secretary of State or the voting?
No, issues? The documents reveal successful cyber attack in California congressional race. The what's his name? Dana Rohrabacher.
You know, okay, this is political. I apologize. But Rohrabacher is a caveman. I don't understand how he keeps getting elected. And the guy basically is a fan of Putin. I mean,
he's a Russian caveman.
He's a Russian agent. It's like obvious. Now I understand how he got elected. Ugh. I'm glad I bought my e-bike last week. And if you haven't bought your e-bike yet, August 23rd, 25% tariffs will take effect on the motors from China. The Bafang motors are very widely used, but there's others, I presume. 25% more after August 23rd. Yeah, there you go. That'll stick it to them. Tell us about the 5G... home internet launch from Verizon, Stacy. Is this really 5G?
It is. It's fixed mobile broadband. Fixed mobile. Yes. Fixed wireless. Sorry. Fixed wireless broadband.
That means it's not for mobile phones. It's for your house.
It also means that it's not for something that roves around.
Right. anything that runs.
It's right. Designed to hit something and provide broadband over a wireless connection to something that stays in one location. So,
Stacey, can I ask a question first?
Yeah.
So I'm presuming this is like a first phase so they can test it out, but eventually 5G will, of course, be for all mobile things. Yes? This is just a way to
There are two variations of 5G. So 5G can mean a lot of different things. There is a 3GPP standard that is for mobile phones. Verizon's going to launch that too. And there is also a standard for fixed. So there are actually there are two different technologies at play. They're related. They're just two different technologies. And then the FCC, mm-hmm. when they talk about 5G, they're actually talking about specific swaths of spectrum. So they're usually talking about, I think it's the 24, 28, 30-something gigahertz, any bands. So, yes, with fixed and mobile.
So what's interesting is this is the first commercial rollout of the fixed version of this. Houston, Sacramento, Los Angeles, and Indianapolis. Those are the four launch markets. It'll be later this year. Customers who sign up could choose to receive a free subscription to YouTube TV, there's your locals, or an Apple TV 4K device, not both.
So what's interesting there is that is like a net neutrality violation. I know we don't have net neutrality.
But it's zero anymore. Right?
It's zero rating. And again, it's not wireline, so maybe the rules wouldn't have applied because we don't care about wireless as much from a net neutrality perspective.
Verizon picking a winner. If you were Sony's PlayStation View or Hulu or Sling TV, you might be a little miffed.
Or, you know, Comcast, their rival.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that'd be interesting if net neutrality... if non-net neutrality is used against Comcast, then how do you feel?
Yeah. So did they show pricing? Because I was very curious how they were going to price this.
No, I don't see it here.
Okay.
You'll also get content from the NFL, NBA, and here's a real net neutrality violation. News from Verizon's own media network, Oath.
Oh.
Oh. Oh, you get TechCrunch. For free. Mm,
free TechCrunch.
So that Verizon implies
this will be the first telecom to launch 5G in the U.S. And I've often thought that what T-Mobile and Verizon and AT&T are talking about when they say 5G, at least in the mobile space, maybe not in the fixed space, isn't really 5G. It's just very fast LTE. But is it?
Uh-huh.
Verizon is actually talking about 5G. T-Mo, I don't know if they are. I need to talk to T-Mo about it. That's my brain going, I think they're doing LTE advanced.
We saw this, they did this before with HSPA
Plus. SPA Plus.
You know, we've seen all the companies, not just T-Mobile, but they partly that's not their fault. What is the definition of 5G? What is the definition of LTE? What is the definition of 3G? All of these are kind of fuzzy, and I think intentionally.
Well, No. LTE was not fuzzy. LTE is actually a 3GPP standard. So that's the people
so
in the cellular.
There is a standard.
World.
Okay.
There is. Leo, I have read the standards.
But that's why that's right. That's why they called it 4G, not LTE.
Yes. So they used to call it Broadcom. Yes. Broadcom used to call Wi-Fi. They were talking about Wi-Fi AC being 5G.
Right.
So somebody tweeted, actually, one of my analyst friends tweeted, he's like, you know, a lot of people talk about they label their Wi-Fi networks like, you know, blah, blah network 5G and 2.4G. And people are going to look at that and they're going to be like, oh, I'm already using 5G. But that's really talking about what band you're on. But normal people are not going to think that way. And why should they?
Jason Howell of All About Android got the new Motorola Z3 later this year. Verizon, if you get it from Verizon, promises a Moto Mod, those are the clip-on backs, that supports 5G on this phone.
Right.
So that's interesting.
That'll support mobile 5G.
Mobile. And again, I don't know what...
You got to go stand in one place.
Yeah. Verizon, I don't know what their plans are. You know, they said 5G would roll out in those four cities, but it turns out that's fixed, right? So I don't
that if it's for home, it's presumably fixed.
Right.
Because with fixed, what happens is it's kind of like satellite, except it's not coming from a satellite. It's coming from a tower somewhere within line of sight of a device on the roof of your house. And ooh, that'll come in and yeah. And
I think we have said everything that needs to be said.
I think we've done it.
There's one other story. I maybe could have put this in the changelog, except it's not an official announcement of Google. So maybe it will be a changelog item later. But according to XDA developers, there is a Google Project Campfire to get Windows 10 running on Chromebooks.
A sacrilege.
Yeah, and we were talking about it on Windows Weekly. Paul Thurrott said, well, why would you want to do that?
Kevin is excited about it, you guys. I swear he wrote a post.
He likes the idea of Linux on a Chromebook, but why would you want Windows on a Chromebook? The whole point of buying a Chromebook is so you don't have to use Windows.
I didn't read his post. I'm sorry.
I'll ask Kevin why. Kevin, of course, is Kevin Toefel, Stacy's co-host on the IoT podcast, but he also has a very good Chromebook site.
Here it comes. Why Windows on Chromebook is a great idea.
Oh, there you go. What is it? Chromebook Central? What's the name of his? I can't remember.
AboutChromebooks.com.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I don't know why.
So let's see. A mental block?
Yeah, there's something about Chromebooks that I just can't remember for some reason, but I will.
Couldn't be simpler, I know.
See, but he had the story, Google One Cloud Storage is available for all today. So I will have to read that as well. Nothing but upside, he says. We already knew that this was coming when we now have confirmation from XDA developers about Project Campfire. In XDA developers, they say it's a terrible idea, but I couldn't disagree more. Right off the bat, it will boost the number of available Chromebooks with improved hardware. Well, that's true, right? Because you do need a certain amount of performance and hard drive and memory to run Windows. He also says, and I think this is the only use case I can think of, it will bring a broader range of software to choose from. I think that if Google is doing this, the one excuse would be perhaps they want to get people to buy Chromebooks, but maybe there's just that one application a school has to use, for instance, or a realtor or something that's just only available on Windows. If you could run that one application on Chromebook, then the Chromebook would be maybe for you Skype.
How about Skype?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Then maybe
so
that
how much is Windows going to cost me?
It's 80 or 90 bucks. Not super expensive.
Okay. All right.
Okay. Well, we'll see. We'll see. We'll watch with interest. I found.
How's the Skype for Linux?
Terrible.
Terrible. Okay.
Terrible.
But hey, Skype is not great anymore for anything.
Yeah. Skype. That, if that makes you feel any better, Skype's gotten bad everywhere. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Microsoft.
And here's the good news. I have found a 1918 recording of the Tiger Rag, which is so ancient that it is in fact in public domain. Okay, it ain't no Louis Armstrong.
It's not Louis.
I kind of like Louis better.
Me too.
This makes it sound like you're about to hear an old Mickey Mouse Steamboat Willie cartoon or something.
Well, we're going to just do slapstick the whole hour.
Hi! Steamboat Willie time!
Walking down the street, falling.
Here's one from 1900. Let's see. That can't be right. The Mills Brothers.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Mills Brothers.
Okay, now I really appreciate what Deutsche Grammophon did with Louis.
Oh, that's good.
With your host, Jeff Jarvis.
That's this.
Ladies and gentlemen, here to take a break. When we come back, the number of the week and the pick of the week.
And not too soon.
Not a moment too soon. Our show today brought to you by ExpressVPN. Oh, we talk all the time about the risks of using the internet at an open Wi-Fi hotspot, about having your internet service provider watch everything you do and then sell that information to the highest bidder. You are being tracked online, and there is a way to stop it. It's ExpressVPN. Widely agreed. Everybody says this is the best VPN out there. Easy-to-use apps on every platform. You turn it on with one click. It secures and anonymizes your internet browsing by encrypting your data and hiding your public IP address. Well, every VPN does that, but ExpressVPN is fast. It does not slow you down. That's really a big deal. And, of course, they have all the best practices, including, they don't keep logs. They work on everything you want. You could safely surf without being snooped on or having your data stolen. TechRadar gave it their top rating, number one VPN service. ExpressVPN comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee. It's less than $7 a month. They have servers all over the world, so you can, emerge at any country you wish, which is nice. If you don't want to hand over your online history to your internet provider or data resellers, if you don't want bad guys to snoop on your traffic while you're at an open Wi-Fi hotspot, if you'd like to appear to be coming from somewhere you're not, ExpressVPN is the answer. Protect your online activity today and find out how you can get 3 months free with a one-year package. All you have to do is go to expressvpn.com/twig. A lot of people ask me, every day they ask me, what's the best VPN? This is the one. It's the one I use. ExpressVPN.com/twig for 3 months free with a one-year package. ExpressVPN.com/twig. Hold that tiger. Hold that tiger. That's a guy doing it with his mouth.
Yeah.
That ain't no Louis Armstrong. That's the Mills Brothers, kid. They were big in my day. Stacy, wake up, Stacy. It's time for your pick of the week.
Okay, since I've been out, I have not been able to test many physical devices, but I did read a good book, and I'm going to share that with you.
Yay.
This apparently came out a while ago. I had no idea. It just, my library was like, you might enjoy this. And I was like, let me try it. This is The Feather Thief. It is a nonfiction book that I didn't even realize was nonfiction until like a chapter or two in. And it starts out with a museum robbery of these bird feathers. And it goes into the history of like, this is silly, feathers for use of adornment and on hats and the extinction of birds and also in the use of fly fishing. There's a whole thing. Normally, many of these things, I would be like fly fishing. I now know way more about fly fishing. And I read The New Yorker and they do a lot of fly fishing coverage. But it's a really good book. And it's...
I'm adding it to my wish list. It's on Audible too, which is great. I need books for our trip.
Yeah. So, I mean... It's not tech related at all, but it was an entertaining read. And now I know a lot more about flies.
I am fascinated by these kind of monograms on sink, like salt.
Right.
Mark, what is it? Mark
Milk Kuriansky. Milk is his new one.
Milk is his new one?
Yeah.
I'm just fascinated. And it started, I guess, with Jessica Mitford, right? Who would take a particular area. She wrote The American Way of Death. And which was blew the lid off of mortuaries and undertakers. Oh,
do you read Mary Roach's books?
Love, a perfect one. Yeah, love her stuff. So this is kind of an interesting, I think, category. This very specific. She did the Bonk, which I really quite enjoyed.
It was hilarious, yes.
And she wrote, kind of following on Jessica Mitford, Stiff, and which is about human cadavers, and Gulp, which is the alimentary canal. These are all, I love this. So I'm going to read about feathers next.
Yeah.
Nice.
And this is kind of more, there's a lot of about feathers, but it's also a true crime book, if you think of it that way.
Ah.
There is an element of mystery.
Oh, The Feather Thief, Beauty, Obsession, and the Natural History Heist of the Century. Oh, I can't wait. I'll put that on my list. Thank you, Stacy.
So there you go.
Number of the week from JJ.
So I've got a number and then I've got a number.
A number.
So the number I should do
is Facebook raised $300 million for 750,000 charities through the birthday fundraising.
Wow.
Next time you say Facebook didn't do anything good for you.
So we've all seen that where you say, in fact, they encourage you to do this when it's your birthday's coming up.
Yeah.
Do you want to have people donate on your behalf? That's a lot of money. That's great.
It is. Yeah, but here's the number we're going to get to. I'm going to see if I can bait you both into buying something. I just saw a cheddar video under other for the Rotimatic.
Oh, an automated
making machine.
I'm not excited about rotis. I don't like
them. You're not. It'll make tortillas too, Stacey.
I know. I can make a tortilla.
What's a roti?
It's a flat pastry.
This is just a bread machine, basically.
Yes.
Oh, well, I thought I could get you too excited.
But I've made papadoms. I love making Indian.
Is that a nice roti?
I made naan. Well, that looks like naan. So is roti the same as naan?
Yes, it's similar. Yes, yes.
So it's a naan maker.
Yes.
But if they called it a naan maker, people would say, well, what doesn't it make? So this is a bread machine. Does it rise the... I actually might buy this. It's a big thing, though.
Wait till you see the price.
Ooh, look how it puffs up.
See, it puffs it up. Isn't that cool?
See, that's a hard... What? You'd have to really like roti a lot. Oh, wait a minute. More than just rotis. It can make any kind of flatbread.
Right.
Rotis, furries, pizza. Yeah.
It's basically a flatbread machine. Now how much would you pay? Look at this small child. Click on his nose. What happens? He's happy. Chef Virat's going to make...
That thing goes back down.
Okay, that's enough. $1,000? Really? Right. But you know what's interesting? How does she know that? Because she's already clicked on it.
No, because my friend Serge sent it to me last May.
No, you are
telling me it was so May, Indium. It's awesome. So it was to Om, me, and our buddy Michael.
Did Om buy one?
No, Om is not. Om doesn't eat at home.
That's the title of the show. Om doesn't eat at home. You know, it's hard to puff naan or roti. That's the trick.
Yeah.
Every time I make naan, it's very dense. I want it to puff. If you choose only mum-improved ingredients, Rotimatic can deliver healthier meals. Anything that makes you eat more bread is not on my list.
Oh, that's why I love it.
Oh, but wait a minute. It's got IoT smarts. So
there we go. It's IoT, Stacey.
With every new roti, it learns. It gets upgraded constantly, always operating with the latest firmware.
It is the June of roti. I'm not going to. Yes. I mean, it is.
So pretty soon I'm going to have like a factory kitchen.
Right? You need that burger robot.
One hardware, many software updates, one Rotimatic, endless possibilities.
No. I'm going to call you on the accent.
Don't I was just imitating that kid.
Nope. He had a British accent. Don't imitate. Just back away.
Rotis are also used in the Caribbean. So you could do it.
Ladies and gentlemen. Wait a minute, Jeff, you had two. Hold on, stop Mills Brothers.
I did them both.
You did them both?
Stop the music.
Stop the music. It's been a great pleasure. See, I figured that I did the change log. So I did my bit.
That's enough. Yes, that's your bit.
That's enough. Because I'm getting hungry.
Okay. Thank you for being
I've got to go. You know what I'm going to do tonight? I'm taping Neil deGrasse Tyson Star Talk.
Oh, you're cool, Jeff.
He appeared on your stage. See? Now you'll appear on his stage.
Yeah, so I got to leave another. I got to see what they can do with the makeup of my eye. But
It's a video.
Oh. Yeah, no, it's Star Talk the show. Yeah.
How exciting. Well, I do hope you have a wonderful time. You'll find Jeff Jarvis in his office at the Tao Knight School of Professional Journalistic Excellence.
The Newmark, Craig Newmark Graduate School of Journalism, which reminds me, we've got to get him on.
Yeah. The Leonard Tao Professor for Journalistic Innovation at the Craig Newmark Graduate School of Journalism at the City University of New York. Thank you, Jeff Jarvis. I hope the eye heals. BuzzMachine.com is his blog. But
ego,
of course,
however, will not.
Yes. You'll find him in The Atlantic this week, this month. And you'll find him on Twitter at Jeff Jarvis. Just remember, be critical of the media you love.
Just not me.
Thank you, Jeff.
Love me, but don't be critical of me.
Stacey Higginbotham, she is the star of Stacey on IoT.com. She's also, of course, the co-host with Kevin Toefel of the IoT podcast. And you'll find her on Twitter at GigaStacey. And you'll find both of them almost every Wednesday right here on twit.tv/live. You can watch 1:30 Pacific, 4:30 Eastern, 20:30 UTC. If you'd like to join us, we'd love it if you would. If you do join us in the live stream, please make sure you join us in the chat room, irc.twit.tv. And you can also join us in studio. We had a lovely studio audience. Three whole people. One from Petaluma, one from the Netherlands. So just covers the map.
Where's that third person from?
Petaluma also.
Oh.
Two from Petaluma, one from the Netherlands. For a total of three.
There we go.
There you are. And if you would
Math
like to
is
do
hard,
that,
Leo.
I know it is. Please email tickets@twit.tv and we will make sure to have a chair out for you. You can also watch on demand. Just put it on your device and that way you'll have it whenever you need it. You can download shows from twit.tv/twig or subscribe in your favorite podcast application. You'll get it automatically. Thank you so much for joining us. We'll see you next time on This Week in Google. Bye bye.